why they are, why someone is acting the way they are, why someone is thinking the way they are. So we have that question. And it reminded me that also in Zen, we have a kind of similar question. And I remembered this question because coming out of our half day sitting on Saturday, I came out of my meditation room and into another meditation room in this house. And I asked the person there, where do all the Buddhas come from? So that's a similar question that we have in Zen. Where do the Buddhas come from? What is their original source? I don't know the answer to this question. But sometimes when we're practicing, we might feel that we get kind of a glimpse of the unseen place where the Buddhas come from. And we might have heard, as I have heard often, that there is an excellent practice that has the possibility for us of encountering that place where the Buddhas come from that really can't be seen and is hard to talk about. And that practice is a practice of sitting zazen. And a practice of sitting zazen is a practice of sitting in stillness. And sitting in stillness might have something to do with the Buddhas. Because the Buddhas, they aren't really messing around with things. They're coming from a quiet. It seems that we don't know where they're coming from. It seems the place is unseen. And it does seem that the more quiet and still we become, the more confident we may be of the place whence all the Buddhas come. So I don't think it's a great revelation to y'all that sitting is an access portal to the Buddha way. Sitting still and quiet and concentrated in upright posture is what could we say? I don't know. It's just the ticket. It's just the ticket. Step right up, folks. You want to see the Buddha? Get your ticket right here in stillness, in silence. So that's what we were doing on Saturday. We were sitting a little bit, a few periods in stillness and silence. And sitting those few periods motivated me to ask this question of my wife who lives here with me in her other meditation room. So in the original teaching of the Buddha, there's a teaching called the eight, sometimes like nine jhanas. And these eight or nine jhanas are the eight or nine entry points, or you could say, like, how in an ocean, you measure ocean in fathoms, right? Fathoms. So these are eight or nine fathoms of going deeper into meditation. That's what the jhanas are. It translates like trance. That's what the actual trance. And it's the word that eventually evolves into Zen. So jhanas are eight or nine fathoms of deepening our meditation. And the first two of these jhanas, the first one includes two stages. And the first stage is called initial thought or initial application. So this is just like deciding to sit down on your cushion, right? This is just deciding to sit down and face the wall, or in our case, face the computer screen. And having, giving rise to some intent to sit quietly, to sit in stillness. So we have initial application, or the initial thought, and then the next of the two, these are still within the first jhana, is called sustained application or sustained thought. So there's a kind of nice metaphor in the Pali canon of the stages of meditation. These two stages of the first jhana. And so the first stage is likened to a bee flying in the direction, flying toward a flower. Bee flying toward a flower. Initial bee has some apprehension that there's a flower out there, and she's flying in the direction of the flower. And in sustained application or sustained thought is the bee hovering over the flower as they do, and staying right in the vicinity of the flower, having found what it was looking for. So having encountered the object of meditation and staying with it, sustaining attention or sustaining thought. So I would like to submit that physical and mental stillness in our Zazen practice is the flower, and it is the bee. The bee and the flower they're mutually attracting each other. The flower can't be a flower without the bee, and the bee can't be a bee without the flower. So these two are mutually attracting each other. It's not like the bee is doing all the work. The flower is doing some work too. Half the work. And so there's this meeting. there's this meeting that happens. And this this meeting of sustained, of the initial application and the sustained application is the entry point into the deeper. I was going to go up, but I was, my metaphor was down, right, to fathoms. So so this meeting is the entry point to the next jhanas, the next two jhanas, which are the jhanas of joy first, and then in some translations, bliss or ease, kind of like ease better, joy and ease. So these two, initial thought, sustained thought or application, are the entryway, the entry gate. And I think we can think of, again, what I would like to convey is that the the effort in our practice, the effort that the bee is making, the effort that the flower is making, are made in stillness, and what the metaphor is a metaphor and a teaching for us to practice directed stillness in our sitting meditation, directed stillness, and to practice meeting stillness, which we could say is the flower. And we're kind of like, more like bees, right? We're always busy. We've got a lot to do all the time. So it's kind of like we're more like bees. But we have this intent to meet a flower and to hover over it and enjoy it and get sustenance from it. Meet that flower and enjoy it in stillness. So I think that's the import of the metaphor. In the mindfulness sutra, it says that a disciple of the Buddha, or sometimes I think it just says a monk goes to a forest, to the foot of a tree, and sits down in a cross-legged posture and puts mindfulness to the fore. A monk goes to a forest, to the foot of a tree, sits down in a cross-legged posture, and puts mindfulness to the fore. And I recently learned, I'm starting a little bit of study on calligraphy, and I recently learned that the character in Chinese characters for for a tree is there's a character there's one character for a tree, and there's another character for a person, and if you put these two characters together, it's called a compound, and it means rest. Very nice. A tree is a place of rest. Maybe it comes right out of the story of this monk who went to a forest, sat down at the foot of a tree, and put mindfulness to the fore. We could also say, we could, you know, since my topic is, you know, this physical stillness that I'm trying to talk about and encourage, we could also say that a monk goes to the forest, to the foot of a tree, sits down in a cross-legged posture, and puts an initial thought of stillness to the fore, and then puts a sustained thought of stillness to the fore. Maybe that's another possibility, although it's not exactly what the Mindfulness Sutra says. So I want to say that physical stillness is a really important element in our sitting meditation. And the implication for me saying that is that I really want to encourage people, you practitioners of Zen, to avoid making voluntary physical movements in Zazen. That's what I'd like to encourage for this Sangha. I like to encourage a practice of not scratching your nose, for instance, when you're sitting Zazen. And feeling the itch, great. Feel the itch. Feel all sensations in the body. And address those sensations with your attention, with your kind attention, your compassionate attention. But don't move. Don't scratch the itch. I found that I heard this teaching long, long ago. And it's been a very important teaching for me to address the minor discomforts that arise in my sitting meditation with my attention rather than my physical response. We commonly, you know, I mean, I'm not immune to, you know, tics of various kinds in my ordinary life. And I'm sure all my life I will be subject to those. And I doubt that there is anybody that's completely free of them. And in ordinary life, I don't think it's necessarily important that you not scratch your itch. Although in some polite company, sometimes it's recommended even there that you not scratch your itch. We could say that Zazen is very polite company. When you're sitting Zazen, just say, I'm sitting in really polite company here, and my fellows here are all sitting so still, and they're not scratching their nose. And I'm going to just try that too. I'm going to make that effort. It seems like a little thing, right? And you could say, well, why? What is so important, you know? And all I can say is try it, if you will. Try just to the minor sensations that come up in your body. Meet those with attention, kind attention, and that's it. Just that bare attention. Let that be your response. So that you don't get because every time you move in Zazen, it kind of releases you a little bit from the cultivation. And you, if you move, if you make a gross physical movement, like a raising your hand or arm, it releases you. And then, you know, you actually kind of have to make some new, you know, renewed effort. And in a sense, you're distracting yourself, you know, when you move in Zazen. Now, this isn't to say, I don't want to say that if you're feeling some awful pain in your sitting, your legs are just screaming because they've been folded in half lotus for, you know, an hour. It's not to say that, you know, make no movement at all. I wouldn't be that strict about it. That I wouldn't be that strict about it. But if you do make some movement in your sitting practice, it should be with, you know, great deliberate. It should be a very deliberate action, a very careful action. Your legs in half lotus, so, and you need to just sit in, you know, a Burmese style. You need to release that top leg, right? So you just mindfully. You sit for a minute and you say, yes, this pain is not good pain. This is not something I should continue to sit with. I've checked it out now. I know this pain. So now you can very deliberately break your posture. You can and slowly. And I know we're on Zoom so, you know, nobody's looking, right? Except everybody's looking. Yeah, so who knows? You don't know who's looking. It's such an odd thing. And this is one of the things we've lost, of course, you know, sitting in this Zoom environment. We don't have, you know, in the Zendo, which we hope to sit in again soon, someday, hopefully soon. We have the encouragement. We have the encouragement of our fellow practitioners, our fellow sincere practitioners, who are really, we see, making such a strong effort. And their stillness encourages our stillness, and our stillness encourages their stillness. And it's really hard to recreate that on Zoom. And that is something we have really... We've really lost that ability and just this natural encouragement that comes when we're sitting together. So hopefully we will be able to return to that. So I'm not saying, I'm not saying never break your posture. That's fine. You need to break your posture if there's sustained pain that, you know, but it's certainly we can avoid like the casual breaking of our posture. And just if you start to feel that impulse of moving your hand or moving your arm, just notice when you start that impulse and then, you know, maybe just relax your hand or arm, and try this. What I'm pointing out. Just address, because you know we're not getting out of having painful sensations in this life. And one thing that our practice can teach us is how to meet difficult physical and mental sensations, how to meet those in stillness, and as stillness as the how, stillness as the how. So you might wonder, you might think, well, what does not scratching an itch have to do with liberation? I mean, really, Jim, isn't this the middle way? I mean, do we have to be that strict with ourselves? And what I would say is what our good friend, our old friend, now passed on, our old friend and Dharma teacher, Darlene Cohen, used to say. And what she used to say is, the middle way is not the gray way. The middle way, and this is mine, I was turning over her teaching, the middle way is not the gray way. And I was thinking, and also, the middle way is not halfway. The middle way is a sincere way. It's a sincere way and in a fully engaged way between black and white, between existence and non-existence, between yes and no. It's a sincere engagement in the middle, and it's an effortful, dedicated effort in the middle. It's not some halfway. It's not some middle. It's not some gray way. There's sincerity in the middle way, and there's effort in the middle way, and there's dedication in the middle way, and there's compassion and great fellow feeling too. So, you know, we sit up in the middle. And as Dogen says, not leaning to the left, not leaning to the right, not leaning forward, not leaning back, not leaning into the past, not leaning into the future, and not leaning into the itch, and not leaning away from the itch, not leaning to attachment, not leaning to aversion. Not moving is the middle way. Practiced compassionately, mindfully, carefully, wisely, not hurting yourself. We never recommend that. But a little strict, careful. Dedicated. So I started my talk talking about these two questions. Where are you coming from? Question that we might ask of a friend or a foe. Where are you coming from? Kind of a secular question. And then we have this other question. Where do all the Buddhas come from? And I would like to suggest that these two questions can meet, just like the bee and the flower. These two questions can meet and they can have a dialogue. As my teacher says, they can have a conversation. Where are you coming from? And where will you meet Buddha? Where do we meet Buddha? in the place, stillness, my person in the other meditation room here said, we'll meet him at the source. Maybe so. But, you know, you have to have the encounter yourself. No one else can have that encounter for you. But we're all here to encourage you to have that encounter. We're all here to encourage you. You know, we're all waiting for the bee and the flower to get together. It's going to be a good day. And it'll be a day when the whole world will wake up. It's spring, you know, so bees and flowers are at work. So let's get to work too. I know you are, and I know you enjoy your practice. I'm so grateful that you practice with us, even still in these trying circumstances. Thank you very much.
So this is our time to bring our questions and thoughts to our teacher, Jim Hare, for his Dharma talk this evening. And you can either raise your hand through the icon with the little hand sign, or you can just raise your hand and Jim, or if Jim doesn't see you, we'll call on you.
Oh, I see Kenny's hand.
Yeah, your talk reminded me of something from Saturday. I don't know if it was a Suzuki Roshi thing from a book, but somebody I read once said, this Buddha you're trying to meet is very shy. And I was trying to, or that came to me because I felt at some point I need to be very quiet and subtle, and I didn't really think of it this far, but like, say, don't scare a bird away or something like that. It was very skittish. So I was thinking about stillness on Saturday. So that was my comment. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Kenny. You know, that it's really true. Like, if we want to have an encounter with a shy creature, a shy, wild creature, the thing we do is we get very still. We become very still because we know that creature isn't ready for the encounter probably. So our way of having that encounter is being very still. Today, as a matter of fact, I had an encounter with a wild creature. I don't think the wild creature really had an encounter with me, but it was kind of cool. I was standing on the Guy West Bridge, and there was a river otter playing in the river down below and diving and surfacing and diving and surfacing and putting on quite a show. And while I was watching, I stayed very still to have that encounter. So I think that, you know, I don't think that the river otter in this case was too shy. He had his own world that he was living in there in the water, and I think he felt pretty safe. it was a nice encounter. I thought I'd mention. Will.
Thank you for that very interesting talk. I have to consider myself a disciple of watching the itch. It was something that I actually deliberately took on about a year ago, just out of the blue. I hadn't read anything about it, but I just was exploring. And something inside me said, there's a teaching in this. It's something very valuable. And so I've been persisting with that, and I'm actually becoming better at it. I'm actually able to reduce the amount of time, the intensity of the itch. It actually dissipates over time that I've been practicing, and almost immediately now, if I have an itch, it may be excruciating, but if I just sit there and observe it, it will dissipate almost completely, very quickly now. And so I have confidence that whenever I have an itch, that if I just sit with it for just a few seconds, it will of its own accord go away just by observing it, just by putting my awareness on it. And I think it's analogous to watching the breath in a way. It uses the same mechanism there of observing. And it's more focused, actually, than the breath. It's hard for me to focus on the breath sometimes. So I'm actually using it in that way. And I actually do that when I'm laying in bed, too. So the practice goes beyond just sitting. When I'm laying in bed, I'll have an itch inevitably. And it actually puts me in a very still space where I can fall asleep in a more aware state as well, too. So I think there's a treasure in that. So thank you for talking about that.
Could we call you grateful for the itch?
There must be a Japanese more exquisite name for it, but sure.
This is a venerable, I mean, I'm not the first Zen person to bring up this teaching. Wasn't there for this example of this teaching, but it's always stuck in my mind. In the winter, some people were practicing with Mel Weitzman, who recently passed away. And a lot of people had colds. So there was a lot of sniffling and blowing going on in the Zendo. And at some point, I guess Mel couldn't take it anymore. And he said, "Let it drip." So I've tried that practice too. And that when you get a cold, you can try that practice and see how it goes. You may find it, pushing the envelope, but, don't hurt yourself. You know, this is not the point. The point is to meet stillness.
I actually went to a sitting one time, it was years ago, and I was squatting away mosquitoes, and there was actually a monk, a Buddhist monk, and I asked him a question about it or something related to it, and he says, "Let it bite you." So I'm not sure if I could rise to that level, but I noticed there were a few, after he said that, there were a few mosquitoes coming his way, and I could see him swatting them too, so.
Yeah, there's stories like that. Clem.
Yeah, I've been seeing Raphael patiently waiting with his hand raised on the screen.
Oh, really? He must be off my screen, but Raphael, please speak. I can't see you, but please go ahead.
Sometimes I can't see myself. I thoroughly enjoyed everything that you just shared. I don't know if it was the butterfly, I mean, the the bee can't be a bee without the flower, and the flower can't be a bee without the bee. And I was thinking, a man can't be a man without a woman, and a woman can't be a man without a man. But then you started with, where are you coming from? And I remember using that phrase, you know, when I know where you're coming from, or where are you coming from? And where do the Buddhas come from? Is that a plural or is that a singular? Where does the Buddha come from? Or where does the Buddhas come from? And so I think for me, I always thought, well, maybe the Buddha is coming through that door. He's not going to come through the window. And then I thought, well, maybe the Buddha comes from all directions. The Buddha appears through compassion, through even through bitterness, the Buddha comes through. And then if that wasn't juicy enough for me to get a good vibration, a good inspiration from your talk, then you came down to the itch. And I've had many itches while sitting, and sometimes I was able to sit with the itch and not move a finger, not even bat an eye when it's, you know, it's just driving me insane. When is that itch going to go away? Why doesn't it leave me alone? And so I believe that the itch is there to teach me a lesson. It's symbolical of, for me in my life, the itch was the impulse. The impulse to be reactive, to be angry. And how do I sit with the impulse, or how do I sit with the anger and not try to do anything about it, but to be attentive to it? Maybe even as Thich Nhat Hanh would say, love the itch, love it. Don't be angry with it. Don't try to swat it. Don't try to make it go away. Just love it. So, yeah, thank you, Jim. I thoroughly enjoyed. I don't know how you was able to go all to these different directions. But I certainly do appreciate everything that was shared in the talk this evening.
Well, thank you, Raphael, for continuing the talk, because it did seem that you added some layers to it. And I think one thing I heard in your response was, if you're paying attention and you notice the inception of some emotion or some sensation at the inception, it's a lot easier to address it and soothe it and ease it than if you don't notice it and it kind of grows out of sight of awareness until it becomes a much bigger and more seemingly solid thing. And then it's not so easy. Then it starts to kind of take over. So I think what you pointed out is mindfulness at the inception, mindfulness, you know, in the first instance is best. So thank you very much. Larry.
Plunge still has his hand up. I think he was ahead of me.
Okay, Clem, then.
Yes, Jim, I'd like to thank you for your talk. My experience with itches, you know, all this talk about itching just brought them on. But my experience with itches is that scratching them is rather futile, because I have found that once scratched, the itch is almost invariably followed close behind by yet another itch. So there seems to be no end to scratching. The other thing I would like to say is that your reference to the Mindfulness Sutra brought to mind something I've read in the Nikayas over and over again, when they briefly describe the Buddha's habitual activities, which is, you know, he always arises in the morning, gathers up his bowl, and seeks alms in the nearby village. And then he will return to his abode and sit in the seat established and sit in the seat prepared. And he establishes mindfulness in front of him, which I always found to be a rather interesting phrase. You know, it's almost like he's conjuring it up in, you know, in his presence, almost like it's another entity. And yeah, I'm still working with that one, but thank you for your talk. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. I hope this talk doesn't get called the art of the itch or the art of the scratch or something like that. That's just an example of a sensation that can occur in Zazen. And as to putting mindfulness to the fore, I think this is a common statement. And, you know, I was, you heard that I was kind of playing with it in the sense of in Zazen, find that, well, let's say, that the middle way is really found at the still point. At the still point. So in Zazen, sitting at the still point is the middle way. And I think that's roughly equivalent to putting mindfulness to the fore. Let's see, now Larry, I guess.
Well, at the outset, I have to say I have reading glasses and back scratchers in just about every room in my house. Will, I'm going to have to talk to you. I need some tips, because this is an issue I'm still working with. And like Clem, Jim, I don't know what it is, but as you were talking, my back, my neck, I don't know what. It was a physical response. You used the phrase bringing the mindfulness to the fore, and during your talk, you used the phrase bringing silence to the fore. And it reminded me of, you know, Kokyo's, when he talks about the screen and the movie, the screen and the image, and bringing the screen to the fore, which is like bringing silence to the fore. And in my sitting, you know, we all have experience where we have different levels. We could have different levels of just, you know, settling and silence. And I have found that when I do reach these, you know, next level of concentration or science or whatever you want to call it, at that point, there is much less of these, you know, bodily sensations that occur. And when they do, they're more diminished. There's same as thoughts. It's not, like you said, Jim, it's not only the itch, but thoughts seem to be less of an impact. You tend to, you know, I tend to less grasp the thought, grasp the itch. So, you know, it's like the chicken and the egg thing, you know, in a sense. But I have found that personally, experienced that in my practice. So thank you.
Yes. Well, you know, it isn't, this isn't like, you know, a switch that we can just turn on, you know, like just, okay, now I'm going to pivot to, you know, complete silence and stillness. You know, we just, well, maybe there's some adepts, you know, out there, and, you know, probably there are, you know, some great adepts who can do that pivot at will. But for most of us, you know, it's more like a washing machine. We're like, you know, it pivots and then it pivots back and pivots and pivots back. And it takes a while for the wash to get done. And then the whole thing to, you know, come to stillness. So this is pretty common, I think, and certainly characterizes my sitting in. But this is why I like sitting long, like we did on Saturday, or like we do on our one day sittings, because, you know, the repeated effort has some lubricating effect and in enabling us to, a little bit more, in a sense, flip the switch. Let's see, I see Brendan and Meg. Brendan?
I think we have Peter and then
Peter first, okay.
Thank you. I am very interested in this conversation, and I realize I'm not a cross-country skier, but one of the major reasons why I have these skis up behind me, I am somewhat of a cross-country skier, as much as most of you are runners. We can run, we can ski. The point I want to get to is I was pretty taken in, I think it was like the Lillehammer Olympics or the 92 Olympics just 2 years earlier. I was just how tough these Nordic ski racers are. And, you know, you talk about this gentleman, Mel, saying, let it flow. These racers have mucus often just running down their faces because they're racing for an hour and they just, you know, they don't have time to wipe their faces. And I really admire them and what they're doing. And I'm also just wanting to say that the itch also includes hunger, and that in the evening, I find myself wanting to eat a bowl of cereal. And it's a victory when by chance I manage to go to bed without eating that extra bowl of cereal. And then I wake up no hungrier. It's like, it's miraculous. The hunger does seem to go away eventually, somewhat as the itch does. And I say this because I fear that we are a society that has increasingly become a society that does scratch the itch. Oh, you know, my wife likes a mattress that's a little softer and I want one firmer. So we have her side and my side, and there's less and less need to tolerate and to compromise. And I think that there is a lot of merit in being like the Nordic skier who is racing from time to time and denying ourselves the ability to rest whenever we want to. So, you know, similarly, I'm very much a climate change fighter who's, you know, trying to get us to be more conservative with our carbon footprint. And, you know, I really like the idea of not getting in the car. Say the Sangha for me is only 2 kilometers away. So, you know, shame on me if I'm using my car every single time to go there. And so.
Well, thank you, Peter. we are looking at, you know, our subjective, I mean, you pointed out very well that we're looking at in this practice at the subject, you know, we're looking at the self, not looking at the object so much. So this is a subjective practice. And so we're looking at what's arising in the subject, which is, you know, and when we really study something, and thank you for bringing up hunger, when we really study for something like hunger, we see how absolutely subjective it is, because we can be in certain circumstances and not feel a bit of hunger, and other circumstances where even though we just ate like 2 hours ago, we somehow, you know, feel like we must have food or we'll practically, you know, faint. And it's, and you could study that very well, and you see just how completely subjective those feelings are. And that's another, hunger is an excellent object for your mindfulness. So thank you for bringing that up as well. Let's see, Brendan? No, Meg? I don't know.
Yes, Jim, thank you for the talk. I was thinking during it that there have been times, a few times during the lockdown where I've been in my office here working at schoolwork, and suddenly I'm not in the office, I'm in the kitchen or I'm in the living room, and I stop and I go, I don't know why I've come here. I'm just here suddenly. And just those small impulses. But to make a firmer point, I think this is a really good practice to practice this in Zazen, because you know, it can be applied to so many areas of life, as it already has been by our other Sangha members. But it can really become a huge problem, because you can end up scratching a big itch or reacting to to something that is painful, but perhaps you haven't sat with it for a while. And I'm thinking of someone specifically in my life who I kind of want to ask, where are you coming from right now? Because they're scratching a really big itch, and I wish they had sat with it for a little while longer. But it also kind of comes back at me as well. And it makes me, I think that even in its very minute sense, even when it is just an itch or small pain, there is tremendous value to learning how to be with it. So thank you for the talk tonight.
Well, you're welcome. This is why we have this laboratory called Zazen, where we can do inconsequential things, like not scratch an itch, so we can learn about how to meet consequential things. And so that just the most inconsequential non things that you do, like not scratching or not even blowing your nose when it drips, can teach us a lot about those consequential things that we feel moved to move. We feel that we must move in response to, but that we sometimes know, oh no, that's not going to be good if I move in response to that. That is really not going to, if I scratch that itch, that's really not going to be good. And that really is going to be unwholesome. And it could hurt other people if I scratch that itch. So I'm not going to. Because I've learned something about that. And I've learned, as Clem said, that itches always come back. Meg.
Yeah, I just sort of like to add an area that's can be subjective and isn't, and also cannot be, and that is the area of pain. It's not just itch and hunger. And I have, over time in my sitting, found much less need for pain medication. It's sort of like what Peter was talking, you know, we go for two sides of the bed. We want to fix everything. And, you know, our society's become really focused on using opioids. You know, I have a pain. Oh, doctor, give me something to make it go away. And what I've learned is, and I have a lot of pain. I have a really bad back. I have a shoulder replacement. I have a neck that's a mess. But a lot of it's subjective. And when I can sit with it, I can almost sometimes parse away what's my reaction to it that enhances it versus what's an annoyance that I don't need to react to. And learning to sit with pain has been a very interesting practice for me. And it is along the lines of sitting with itch and sitting with your hunger. You know, not to the point, like you said, of sitting zazen to where you know you're doing hurt. But it is learning to distinguish what is something where I actually need to move my leg and what is something where I can sit through it. I think the word is through it, to sit through the pain, to notice it, pay attention to it, be nice to it. And sometimes, like Clem said, it just goes away. You know, oh, I thought that hurt. No, not so much. So I think it's a really important, you know, John Kabat-Zinn. It's a really important pain management method that I came upon before I read John Kabat-Zinn, but he explained it. But I think that it fits with what your talk. Your talk was really really helpful, and I just loved the way it flowed from the "where are you coming from" and "where do Buddhas come from" to that being able to sit in the middle way. I thank you so much, Jim.
You're welcome. And I'm sure your investigation that you're doing of in your own body will help you. I'm sure you meet people in your work that are suffering a lot of pain and certainly have reason to. Mm-hmm. And your investigation of your own pain, I don't know how, but I think it will help the people that you meet.
Yeah, and also for many of my patients, there's an anxiety factor that the first thing that our doctors do is, oh, give them some Xanax, give them some Ativan. And it's like, wait a minute, we can teach people to manage this. We don't really have the time, but wonderful story of a gentleman who he couldn't take the meds. So I asked him one time where his favorite place was in the world. He started to describe Bodega Bay. And I started to get him. I said, so what do the waves sound like? Finally, he said, are you trying to distract me? And I said, yeah, is it working? And he said, yeah. And we created a room that had videos of the ocean, the sound of foghorns and birds. And that's where he would go when he was anxious. And it would settle him down. You know, we don't have to flow. We can... There are lots of ways. I use lots of techniques, but this is what I was talking about when I said it. Yeah, I think a lot of it applies to my work, but was really specifically about the physical pain that I live with all the time and have with for a long time. So, it's powerful to sit with discomfort, physical, mental. And I love the fact that you use the word itch to describe it all. It was great. And the bee and the flower. Thank you.
Thank you, Meg. I think, that this is one of the things that we could wish for is to be, a calming and easeful presence for ourselves and a calming and easeful presence for others.
I'm better at it for others.
Yeah,
well, I am for myself.
Well, then practice on others so you can You can practice on yourself. Thank you. Well, I think we've reached our witching hour here. So thank you very much. I'll take us out with the after lecture chant.